Masterpiece Studio is brought to you by Viking Cruises, exploring the world in comfort. Learn more at vrc.com. I'm Jace Laycobb, and you're listening to Masterpiece Studio. Nearly 7 years have passed since we were first introduced to Sherlock's Molly Hooper, the mousy lab technician who pines for Sherlock Holmes.
I was wondering if you'd like to have coffee.
Black, 2 sugars, please. I'll be upstairs.
Okay.
As the legend goes, Mark Gatiss and Stephen Moffat, the show's creators, didn't envision Molly being a long-standing character, but they were charmed by her and decided to keep Molly and the actor who plays her, Louise Brealey, around. Since that first episode, Molly has gone from being the butt of a joke to a fan favorite. She's gotten to slap and kiss Sherlock Holmes, and we've even seen her portrayed as a mustachioed Victorian doctor in The Abominable Bride.
I really liked it a lot. I did not want to take that mustache off.
How will Molly Hooper surprise us next? With a new season of Sherlock lurking just around the corner, Louise Brealey answers our questions and asks a few of her own about her character and Sherlock lore, both past and future. This week, we are joined by Sherlock star Louise Brealey. Welcome.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
True or false, Molly Hooper was only originally meant to appear in the first episode of Sherlock.
You see, that's a question because that was the story that has become the thing that I think Stephen and Mark say. But I don't know. I always thought she was just going to be in it, which is because originally there were 60-minute episodes rather than the 90 minutes that we now have. So I thought she would just be bobbing up and getting insulted once an episode for sort of ever. But anyway, they tell me now that no, she was just an idea for the start, and then they were so enchanted by her that they brought her back, which is a nice story, and I'm gonna stick with it and pretend that that's the God's honest truth.
What do you make of the character's immense popularity and her longevity?
Well, gosh, it's a big question. What do I make of it? Well, I like it. It's great. It's great that people have enjoyed encountering her and they can see perhaps some humanity in her. I don't know. What do you think?
I love her. I mean, I think she sort of is, in a show filled with misfits, perhaps the most outsidery misfit of them all. She's sort of the audience's entry point in a way.
Yeah, she's it was a bit at first as if she was several women that I knew that were sitting on their sofas watching it and longing to sort of stroke Benedict. I think there was a bit of that certainly at first. And I think because she's sort of so ostensibly normal, that helps in terms of an audience entry point, doesn't it? I mean, I know the obvious person that's doing that is John Watson. I mean, that's the character in the books. That's his job amongst other jobs, is to be, you know, the reader, isn't it? And I think in her very small way, Molly sort of achieves that for womankind.
You, to date, still have the best description of Molly Hooper that I've ever read, which is, you wrote that she was, quote, the awkward, besotted morgue mouse with the Christmas present bow in her hair. Is that still how you see her?
Do you know, I don't think it is anymore, which is rather nice because she's sort of 7 years old, really, isn't she, as all the characters are. And I think over that time, she's grown. I mean, you'd think that somebody would grow over that time. Hopefully you have, I have. And she has too, which is great. Although I still think she probably put a Christmas present bow in her hair.
What was your initial audition for Molly like?
Well, it was very unremarkable. It was quite a small part, so I wasn't, sort of hadn't got very worried about it or anxious. And I just went in and did my bit. There were three people sort of facing me, and which is unusual. It was a bit sort of It felt slightly intimidating in there. So at that point, I was like, oh, okay. Mark Gatiss was there. Sue Virtue was there. And the casting director, Kate Rose James. But I wasn't like, God, I've got to have this part. I absolutely loved the script, as does anyone who ever reads that script. Because, well, I'm not going to pursue the metaphor, but it is a thing of beauty. It really is. It's just so good. And then I got it and went to the read-through and saw immediately that Martin Freeman and Benedict, and even he doesn't need a surname anymore, does he? And Benedict were that something remarkable was happening. The only other time I've been in a read-through room and anything like that's happened has been when I did Bleak House a long time ago, and that was clearly brilliant. But yeah, it was really special. So it was only at that point that I just thought, crikey, I'm glad, I'm really glad I got this.
I will say I finished rewatching Bleak House for the 80th time last night. So we'll talk about Judy Smallweed in a little bit. I've only seen it 80 times.
Oh. Yeah, so you know the script's pretty good.
Yes. The first time we see Molly is the scene with Sherlock in the riding crop at St. Bart's in A Study in Pink.
How fresh?
Just in. 67 natural causes. He used to work here. I knew him. He was nice.
Fine. We'll start with the riding crop.
What was it like filming that sequence?
Well, of course, we filmed it twice because we did it for the pilot, which was then sort of rewritten slightly and bumped up to an hour and a half. So I actually filmed that scene twice, I think, unless I've lost my marbles, which is entirely possible. It was a while back. The writing was so good that I immediately had a clear feeling of how I thought she might be. And, you know, some of that stuff just outright amusing, I think, with her. I found this little okay that she says. She sort of nods and goes, okay, okay.
What happened to the lipstick?
It wasn't working for me.
Really? I thought it was a big improvement. Mouth's too small now.
Okay.
And that sort of seemed to... that sort of got me through the first episode. It's just... Yeah, she just wouldn't say boo to a goose in that. In that season, I think, and certainly not in that episode. Anyway, I digress. It was brilliant fun. In fact, we weren't shooting at Bart's, obviously, but we were in a morgue in Merthyr Tydfil in South Wales, which is one of the least fun places that I've been to. Not to be mean about Merthyr Tydfil.
Its charms, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm sure it does. The mortuary at that hospital isn't one of those charms. So it was a very curious sort of environment, and we were all slightly trying to pretend that we weren't really filming in a morgue with loads of actually dead people in the fridges. But in fact, we've not filmed there very much over the season because Mark in particular absolutely hates it, and I don't blame him. It is quite odd. So... yeah, so we were there with Benedict whacking a cushion.
What do you make of Molly and Sherlock's dynamic and how it's shifted over these three seasons?
Well, first, I just think the fact that it's shifted is brilliant. Their dynamic is very funny and very, you know, hopefully ultimately moving once you sort of key into Molly and start to hopefully like her and invest in her and what she desperately wants. And then how that sort of developed, I just think it's very skillful of the writers because, you know, in another show that would have just continued, and really appreciated the way that she sort of grew and her great love for him. Ultimately, I don't think it diminishes her somehow. I don't know how it's possible because... I don't want to get all sort of vague about it, but
no, get philosophical.
Yeah, well, I just think, you know, unrequited love is hard, but there's something about being able to love like that that I do think it's redemptive, and I think that their friendship would have been very unlikely at the very beginning, because he just didn't respect her in the slightest, I don't think. And she was just, you know, that emoji with the love heart eyes. I mean, that was what she really was. And I think, yeah, I don't think that's the case anymore. I don't think her love is remotely diminished, but I keep saying diminished. I must have read it today. Not that I've never read it before, but do you do that when you just sort of get a word and just completely overuse it? Anyway, sorry. Reduced. Yeah. I really love their relationship. I'm really I love Molly. I'm really proud of what I did with the part, and I just think the writing's terrific. So every box is ticked. I've bumbled off into other things, but perhaps yes, you might want to.
No, there's a bit of fan service in the kiss Molly and Sherlock share in the fantasy sequence in the empty hearse, which represents Anderson's theory about how Sherlock survived the fall. It's a gorgeous, gorgeous scene. What was it like filming that sequence?
It was so James Bond, the whole thing. I mean, obviously we were in a studio, and there was sugar glass and crash mats and harnesses and all sorts. And that it was just a great laugh. Ben and I are friends, and it was just brilliant fun to be doing this sort of crazy scene. I mean, I didn't realise that it was going to be for, you know, some Sherlock fans as exciting as I think it was. I mean, it really was crackers. I think at the time I had something like 7,000 Twitter followers, and within about a minute and a half of that kiss screening, I had 14,000.
Wow.
I mean, it was absolutely bonkers. And I mean, I've always taken the credit for Ben's hair ruffle as he comes through the window to get rid of his glass. He did it in one take, and then he didn't do it in the next one. I said, Ben, put the ruffle back in. It's hot. Do it again. So he did. And so...
It makes that scene.
Well, I think so, Jace. I think so. I'm sure Ben will take the credit himself, but he's lying.
It's all Louise. It was all Louise. Molly and Sherlock form a short-lived crime-solving partnership in the empty hearse.
They do.
Why do these two keep coming back to each other?
Well, it's sort of... I know why Molly simply loves him. And it's not a sort of... I don't think it's a stupid thing. I think there's something pure and beautiful about her love for him. And so he, Sherlock, has become... You know, we've seen more of his vulnerabilities and humanity. And I think Molly saw it from the start. And I think that's one of the reasons why she cares for him. And in terms of him with her, I think she surprised him. I don't know, I really like that these tiny sort of tiny moments happen, and other stuff's obviously going on behind, you know, that we don't see as an audience. And something about those tiny moments tell you that this sounds odd, so you might have to winkle out exactly what I'm on about. But it's like those tiny, tiny moments make you feel like there's something else happening somewhere else. Does that make sense?
It does. Well, speaking of, I think there are these sort of tiny moments that have huge weight. When Molly is able to see Sherlock in a way that the others can't, she says,
"Are you okay? Don't just say you are, because I know what that means, looking sad when you think no one can see you."
"You can see me."
"I don't count."
That does play into sort of what we don't get to see, what happens between episodes or between scenes that gives a weight to their relationship. I think that's what maybe you're alluding to.
I think so. And I just think the quality of the moments we do see are such that they sort of allow you to dream around them a little and just think about who these people might be.
I mean... Sherlock humiliates Molly at the Christmas party in A Scandal in Belgravia. Is he especially cruel to Molly, or does it feel more cruel because of her unrequited love for him?
That's a really good question. I think you could argue either. I don't have the answer to that. I would like to think that he's especially cruel to her, because I think that gives her a status with him that I would like Molly to have. But I don't know.
I mean, I think she does have a status. You know, the one person Moriarty thought didn't matter to him mattered the most. She made everything possible.
Well, it's true. You're right. I'm being bashful. No, you're absolutely right. I think she unsettles him, or did, you know. I think there's something about the sort of purity and simplicity and sort of unconditional nature of her love, which he does see ultimately. And there's something about that doesn't sit well with him. I don't know. Maybe it frightens him. I don't know.
Maybe it does.
What do you think?
It might. It might be that sort of unsettling
thing. It's sort of counter to who he is.
Yeah. I mean, she is overt.
She's all feeling, isn't she?
Yes.
And he's all
thought.
Thinking. I mean, at least that's what we're sort of, that's the sort of baseline. So, yeah.
She has the worst track record when it comes to men.
Yeah.
Sherlock, Jim Moriarty, Tom, who seems to be a Sherlock monkey. Why can't she find happiness when it comes to love?
Well, I don't know. What, as I'm not her psychologist, and it's not my job to do that. However, it's very difficult not to sort of wonder. And I think the obvious answer is that she can't find happiness with someone else because Sherlock is just in her blood. But I don't know. Maybe she can't. I don't know. I mean, the COD psychology version is she knows he's not going to commit and she's afraid of committing herself. So that's where she's gone there. But I don't really get into that because it's not conscious on her part. So it's not really useful to me. I don't know. I wonder what she would think about it. I think she would probably prefer not to think about it.
See, I want a Molly in therapy episode. That's what I want.
Molly goes
to therapy.
Yeah, Molly goes. Oh, bless her.
Before this next question, a brief word from our sponsor. Masterpiece Studio is brought to you by Viking Cruises. See the world differently by exploring differently. Learn more at vrc.com. Masterpiece Studio is also brought to you by Farmers Insurance and their 88 years of experience. Helping people so they can prepare for the unexpected. They know a thing or two because they've seen a thing or two. Find an experienced agent at farmers.com. Where do we find Molly in season 4?
I haven't seen it. I'm seeing it on Monday.
I'm ahead.
I'm seeing it in 3 days. And I mean, obviously I read the script, but I'm really looking forward to it. Tell me how brilliant it is. How brilliant is it?
It's very brilliant.
It is very brilliant, isn't it? I thought it might be. I'm really excited about the scripts this season. I think they're just the best. So spare and dark and, it was really great to play them. But in terms of where do you think Molly is then? Well, she's wearing a very fetching head thing again. It's red.
It's red.
Will I get in trouble? Anyway, she's got a sort of nice head scarf thing on. And where is she? Well, she's all right, isn't she? Bobbing along.
She's doing fine.
I think she's doing all right. Yeah.
Okay, we're going to play a little game. This might be difficult because you haven't seen the episode, but you've read the script and you acted in it. So
I did.
This episode, this interview is running before the first episode of season 4. If the six Thatchers were an adjective, what would it be?
Oh.
These get harder as they go.
Oh, great. I failed the game on round one. Well, okay, I'll just be quick. Black.
If it were an animal, what would it be?
I'm so not a lateral thinker. This is hell. I'm sweating. Animal. I know. Do you get Planet Earth in America?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I'm basically plugging a million other shows that aren't on your channel. I'm sorry. Anyway, it's brilliant. And there's this scene where a marine iguana hatchling is pursued by a lot of snakes up a mountain. And it's amazing telly. Anyway, I think it might be one
it's
of those.
That. If it were a body part, what would it be?
Oh, goodness me. Achilles heel.
Ooh.
I don't know.
Yeah, so that's, it's true, though. Yeah, I like that, Achilles heel. And lastly, if it were food, what would it be?
Oh, good heavens. What would you say? I want to ask you all. I bet you've already thought about it, haven't you?
I haven't. God, you're putting me on the spot now.
Answers. Right, what meal would it be? You've got to help me out here. I've done all the other ones.
Steak and kidney pie.
You're so funny. Okay, with peas?
With peas. Well,
garden peas?
Yeah, of course. Has to have peas, yeah.
Obviously.
Okay. Do you have a favorite scene from the series to date of your own?
It's hard. I really loved dressing up as a man.
Yes.
And having a moustache.
Abominable Bride.
So that was pretty fun. I just really, really, I really liked it a lot. I did not want to take that moustache off. And I thoroughly enjoyed walking around in what was Daniel Radcliffe's suit from The Woman in White. That's what I was wearing. So, yeah, it was a lot of fun. It was really fun being Victorian, but with the show, because it just didn't actually feel that weird. You'd think it would be sort of jarring or anomalous in some way, but it didn't. It was just like, oh, yeah, here we are.
Your Twitter bio reads, actor, writer, feminist, dog botherer.
Yes.
Which of those descriptors best captures you as a person?
Dog botherer.
Why are you always bothering dogs?
Because I don't have one. I can't really have one because I've got a silly career, a wonderful career, obviously, but a career that doesn't really allow for you to have a four-legged friend. So I just pester everyone else's in the street. And yeah, I mean, that's really a defining factor when I'm outside. You know, if I'm outside in the streets, then it will definitely be dog botherer. But I don't know which of the other three, and I think I'm all of them.
Do you see Molly Hooper as a feminist character?
That's interesting because I was really coming into a much clearer understanding of feminism and how it impacted me in my life and the women around me and the women in my family through those 7 years. I became much more political. So there was an interesting moment for me actually around the Christmas present scene when we were rehearsing it, because we used to sort of do a little bit of rehearsal. No, we don't need to do it anymore because we're all marvellous at it. So we don't need to practice. But so we were rehearsing that, and it was a slightly previous version. And in that version, Molly didn't really have a comeback. Sherlock gave her all that stuff about breasts and... Excuse me. Oh, dear. Oh, dear. Oh, right. Hang on. Erase the tape. Whoops. Well, there you go. You see, it's because I'm riled. Well, anyway, about breasts and lips and blah, blah, blah. And I was there and I did the scene and it didn't have a comeback. And I just said to Mark and Stephen, I said, look, I know she's, at that point, she was still quite mouse-like. I know she's a little rodent and everything, and I know that she adores him, but she needs to say something. I don't know anyone. No. She needs a comeback.
It's for someone special, then. Shade of red echoes her lipstick, either an unconscious association or one that she's deliberately trying to encourage. Either way, Miss Hooper has love on her mind. The fact that she's serious about him is clear from the fact she's giving him a gift at all. That always suggests long-term hopes, however forlorn, and that she's seeing him tonight is evident from her makeup and what she's wearing. Obviously trying to compensate for the size of her mouth and breasts.
You always say such horrible things. Every time. Always. Always.
Look, I think it's absolutely fine to play an anti-feminist, a racist. It doesn't matter. If the show isn't supporting that point of view, then that's fine. You know, I didn't have to play someone who was empowering or empowered. I don't have to do that. It's a ridiculously boxing in thing. But at the same time, you have a sort of responsibility. I don't know. You get into dodgy ground. But anyway, I was really glad they gave her that other line. And I'm really excited that she has a dignity to her. Yes. I've gone off on one again, haven't I?
No. I can't get through this interview without saying Shake Me Up, Judy, which I say at least once a week because of Judy Smallweed in Bleak House. That was pretty early on in your career. What was that production like?
Well, it was wonderful because I was with the completely brilliant Phil Davis the whole time because I was playing his granddaughter, much to his chagrin, because he's not that, you know, he's certainly not old enough to be my grandfather. But, and in fact, still whenever I see Phil about, because obviously he was in Studying Pink, wasn't he?
Yeah,
so we occasionally see each other around the houses and I absolutely love him. And I always am shocked by how well he looks. And I was like, Phil, you look amazing. And he's like, yes, Lou, you say that every time. I was covered in red stuff from my face veins and I had all my teeth yellowed when we did that job. So I always think he looks amazing when I see him. It was great and it was really fun to be, you know, doing a period drama. And also the other brilliant thing about it for me was that I didn't really have any makeup. It was a sort of little pot of brown dust that the makeup designer just sort of smeared artistically on my face, which was immensely liberating because you didn't have to try to look, you know, attractive. Anyway, I digress. So that was lovely. Me and Phil were always really surprised by how much people enjoyed Shake Me Up, Judy. Bless him.
There's been talk that this might be the final season of Sherlock. If it is, what will you take away from your experience on the show?
Oh, you know, it's funny, even just sort of acknowledging that possibility is, it's just been a really big part of my life. I owe it so much and I love it and I love her. And it's a funny one, I think. Being involved in a show that big, I'll always be Molly from Sherlock. I just will. And I'm okay with that. You know, obviously, I also want to work and surprise people and challenge myself and, you know, be allowed to grow as an actor as well as a person. But at the same time, I don't sort of feel allergic to the idea that this show changed my life and has touched so many people. I mean, how impossibly annoying of someone would that be? You know, I know that does happen occasionally, and I'm sure it's, you know, it gets, if you're super famous, it must get absolutely relentless and you want to just go, Krah! But I'm not in that bracket, and it's nice. You know, I was having a dinner with my friend last night in a lovely little Italian restaurant up here in Edinburgh where we've been filming, and this very drunk woman came and knelt at my feet. she was a grown woman. It just wasn't a child. And I mean, she was, as the Scots say, steaming, very drunk. But she was, you know, she was just so excited about Sherlock the show, and she just loved it. And you know, how can you, you know, obviously, if there was a queue of people wanting to kneel at your feet while you're trying to eat your tagliatelle, it might be problematic, but that's not my life. So I'm just very glad that I did a good audition that day and that I got this chance to be a part of something like this, because I don't think it happens very often.
The game is almost on. Ring in the new year with brand new Sherlock, premiering on January 1st at 9 p.m. Eastern on Masterpiece and streaming online.
And it's more fantastic adventures, frankly.
Get a head start on your new year by subscribing to the Masterpiece Studio podcast. All you have to do is open up your favorite podcast listening app. We recommend iTunes or Stitcher. Search for Masterpiece Studio and then hit subscribe. At least in the world of Masterpiece Studio, 2017 is shaping up to be great, and subscribing ensures that you won't miss out on any of the fun. And speaking of fun, Masterpiece Studio is now 1 year old. Thanks so much to you, our listeners, who have followed the show week to week, given us feedback, and written a review or left us a rating on iTunes and Stitcher. Your support has truly been invaluable. So here's to another year, and here's to our new sponsors, Viking Cruises and Farmers Insurance. Masterpiece Studio is hosted by me, Jace Lacob, and produced by Rachel Aronoff. Kathy Tu is our editor. Special thanks to Barrett Brontes and Suzanne Simpson. The executive producer of Masterpiece is Rebecca Eaton. Sponsors for Masterpiece on PBS are Viking Cruises, Farmers Insurance, and the Masterpiece Trust. But I loved your raspy man voice as Dr. Hooper.
Oh, dear. Yeah, that was a funny old day. Yes, I don't know. I can't.
Holmes, Watson, all that stuff.
It was very Frank Butcher from EastEnders.
Oh, God. Thanks a lot. Jesus.
In a good way.
Yeah.